show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we are back and in full force this week. I know it's been a little bit, but we're here because you can't get rid of us, even if you tried. Although you actually could, because it's a podcast. It's totally your choice to listen. Yep. So if you wanted to get rid of us, you absolutely could. But we're here anyway, and it's been pretty uneventful since we've been gone. But, you know, that's what happens when you're 50 games under 500. We'll get to that in a second, though. First, introductions. I, of course, am Jeff Hur, and with me, as always, as the man who's never under 500, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this? It's a very nice kind of fall-like evening here. We've got it's a little bit overcast, and it's a little bit cooler in the mid-70s and such. It's nice. I don't know. I assume the weather's pretty close down in Lawrence.
Yeah, it's pretty close to that. It's a little – there's been a lot of rain the last, like, week and a half, 2 weeks, so it's a little stuffy, but, you know.
A little sticky. Yeah, it happens.
It's not 100 in that. It's, like, 75 in that, and that's doable. So I'll take that as a win. The last couple of weeks don't feel like I've been hitting 500. at least at work, it's been a little crazy.
Yes.
So glad things are calming down. We're able to talk some baseball instead of, you know, real world stuff. So
indeed. And speaking of which, the baseball news of the day, folks. The Royals, don't let that July 31st trade deadline fool you. There's still trades to be made in baseball for another month. And as we sit here on August 29th, we still have a couple days left, but the Royals didn't even want to wait that long, and they decided to go ahead and make a waiver deadline deal. They traded Lucas Duda to the Atlanta Braves for cash considerations, who has, by the way, despite the name, not related to the cash considerations that the Royals received earlier in the year. For a previous trade. So don't get confused. I know it's very confusing. It's a very common name, but, you know, it's that.
They need the middle initial on the jerseys when they
Yeah,
when
you know, it's like
it.
Adalberto Mondesi and Raul, well, though he isn't related, but you know what I mean.
Right.
So anyway, Lucas Duda has been traded to the Atlanta Braves. Expected, I think. A lot of us thought maybe they'd get it done before the non-waiver trade deadline, but they couldn't for whatever reason. So now here they are, and they've, you know, and I think it's just kind of a thing. You know, the Braves are actually somewhat in contention, or I shouldn't say somewhat, they are in contention.
Right.
And the, because they're in first place in their division, but the Royals, of course, are not. So it's more of a, hey, we'll put you on a team. We'll send you to a team where maybe you can, you know, get some playoffs, get something going, and then we'll split the difference on the remainder of your contract. Save us some money, give the Braves another option as they head down the home stretch here and try and go. They're actually in reach of that number one seed there if they can do a couple things swing their way for the NL. So good for him. Good luck to him, Lucas Duda, as we have wished good luck to all those who have parted ways with the Royals this year. So any final parting thoughts on the Lucas Duda era in Kansas City, Mike?
You know, he didn't play that poorly. I mean, he kind of gave about what we would have expected. He did miss some time for that plantar fasciitis, but he came back and hit pretty well. He's the last couple months, he's hit a good number of homers. He is what he is. He's a guy who can hit for power. He's going to be really good against righties, not as good against lefties. Can take a walk, but will strike out. I mean, that's exactly what we thought when the Royals signed him, and that's exactly what, you know, he was this year. 242 batting average, 310 on base, 413 slugging. It's not lighting the world on fire, but it's okay. And, you know, I'm not too surprised that the Royals traded him off to a contender. One, I think he was signed with the purpose of, hey, let's see if he can accidentally hit 30 homers and we can trade him at some point. Didn't quite do that, so there wasn't much of a market. But, you know, I think for the month of September, the Braves can use him off the bench. You know, rosters will expand here in just a couple days. So they don't necessarily need to, you know, it's not like he's taking a dead roster spot. He's able to just kind of be on the bench if they need a pinch hitter. He can hit against righties. You know, they may have some interleague games that he could DH. And really, frankly, I feel like he's played a pretty decent first base defensively. You know, the thing that Royals fans definitely had to remember was his World Series Game 5 throw. I mean, of course, you know, just such a huge moment.
Right.
And I think that's when he signed, that was the impression that people got, was that this guy's just going to, like, kick the ball around the field. And you were going from Eric Hosmer, who had this sparkling defensive reputation and a gold glove. And, you know, every step of the way, he'd been touted as a great defensive first baseman. And then here's Duda, who on the biggest stage throws the ball away like that and did not have that reputation. I don't think they're that far apart. In fact, Duda might be just as good and maybe even better than Hosmer defensively. It might be that the Royals are positioning him differently because he does not have the range that Hosmer would, but he's made some plays. And I don't remember him throwing the ball away at any point. And he's had plenty of times, you know, opportunities to try that, the 3-6-3 double play. And I don't think he's thrown it away. So, yeah, I mean, they can use him in the NL as a first baseman if they want to. So, yeah, you know, the biggest benefit is that the Royals, you know, don't continue to pay his plate appearance incentive bonuses. And the Braves get, you know, a hitter with a little playoff experience and some very definite strengths to go along with the weaknesses. And the Royals get a cleared spot on their 40-man roster. So it's, you know, for a guy that probably didn't draw a lot of interest, he wasn't going to get a very big name prospect, but they got some cash for him, and that's better than no cash for him. So, you know, they kind of come out with pretty much a win-win. You kind of wish, yeah, would he hit, you know, 15 more homers and been more of a drop? Sure. But, you know, for what he did, 13 homers, 12 doubles, you know, just didn't do much other than hit homers and kind of strike out a little bit. They got some cash and they got a roster spot. So I think the Royals would be pretty happy with that, even though it's very much a minor transaction.
Yes. And kind of like what you said at the top of your comment there, where you said, you know, we kind of got what we expected. I think that's the value that Lucas Duda provides and why a team like the Braves would be interested in at least trying to see how he fits in on their current roster, that you know what you're going to get with him. So, you know, if down the stretch, if they've got a big moment and they need a pinch hitter and they need that person to come in against a right-handed pitcher, then boom, they've got somebody who's a good candidate for that and can do some, you know, can do some work for them. Or somebody who they can put into first base in a pinch, or et cetera. So I think that's the value that he provides and why a team would still make a trade for him at this point. But, you know, I'm inclined to agree with you about the defense. And that's kind of it's one of those weird things with Eric Hosmer that I was going to kind of bring a comparison to Salvador Perez, but I don't know if it's exactly Salvador Perez is a little bit different, but in terms of how the reputation has shaped their defense more so than the actual, you know, production has. And this is not to slight Eric Hosmer, but you know, you don't hear people talking about just how amazing Lucas Duda is and how he is not winning gold gloves every year like Hosmer was when he was with the Royals. So it's, but the gap is really not that far, just as you said.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see that. And there was that conventional wisdom that was saying, oh, well, you know, the defense is going to suffer because, you know, besides Hosmer's range, just, you know, all the scoops he made and being so tall and help, you know, there were so many bad throws that would have been errors, but he was able to convert them into outs. And so all the stuff And I hadn't really noticed the difference, you know, just like you were saying. I didn't really think, oh, wow, this is, you know, up. Oh, that would have been caught by Hosmer, and it was totally screwed, and now, you know, it's all Duda's fault. there was none of that going on, at least in what I was able to watch. So good for him. You know, he played well. And, you know, I think you mentioned the plantar fasciitis that he had that kept him out for a little bit. I honestly think, you know, had that not happened, because he was off to a pretty good start to the season. I mean, he obviously had the big opening day home run, but, you know, he was still off to a good start for the season anyway after that. And had he not been injured, I think the Royals probably could have pulled off a trade. Assuming he would have continued solid production, I think the Royals would have been able to pull off a trade at the non-waiver trade deadline. Like, I'm not saying they would have gotten a ton for him. They would have gotten probably just some low A, you know, lottery ticket type prospect.
Yeah, some 25-year-old in Double A with one pitch.
Which, yeah, you know, more than something more than cash, but not still nothing that's gonna, you know, blow your hair back or anything like that. But you know, they got something for him, and they sent him to a team who's likely gonna make the playoffs. So good for him. Good luck to him. And with that, we can kind of lead into, with Lucas Duda coming off the roster, and as we mentioned, the August 31st deadline for the waiver trade deadline, August 31st also signals the starting of September. And as we know, September is when the roster expands. So every year is kind of, for good teams who are competing, it gives them a chance to maybe bring up some younger guys who could help them down the stretch run and or be on the playoff roster, or sign some veterans and get them in there and get them acclimated, you know, similar to a Lucas Duda, where they don't have to just do some shifting to create some roster room for him. They can just take him and put him in there. I mean, I guess technically they do, since it's before the roster expansion, but they can just, whoever they send down for Lucas Duda, they can just bring him right back up in a few days. Mm-hmm. So it gives, you know, teams a lot of freedom to do that kind of stuff and get that sorted out before they make their stretch runs and go into the playoffs. But then on the flip side, you know, if your team like the Royals are now, where you are most certainly not in contention, then it gives you an opportunity to just say, hey, we're going to bring up all these players in a non-pressure-filled non-pressure-filled environment where they can come up and get some major league coaching, get some major league experience, and see what it's like, and see if, you know, they can hack it. Because sometimes, you know, right away, someone, it's, the stage is too big for them, and they need more time. And sometimes you think, oh wow, this kid's more advanced than we thought. You know, you can learn. You're not gonna know if a player is gonna be a superstar unless they're like a Mike Trout or something. But you know, even he didn't do that great in his first kind of partial season. So it's not going to tell you that, but it can tell you some things, and it can tell you, show you how they acclimate and how they're going to be at the major league level. So there's a lot of value for that with the younger players. And you know, the Royals definitely have a lot of room for that. They've traded away most of the people they started the season with. They already have a roster that consists of a lot of really young players and lesser known players. And now there's room for more. So we've kind of detailed the names of some players that we think are good candidates for getting called up and being part of that roster expansion. So why don't you start us off, Mike? Give us a name off that list we can kind of talk about here.
Well, some of the really obvious ones are guys who are already on the 40-man roster. For the most part, anybody, I think, with the exception of Mabrys Viloria and Samir Duanez and Kelvin Gutierrez, and Bubba Starling. Everybody who is on the 40-man roster right now, I believe, has been in the majors this year or last year at some point. It may have been for just a couple of innings or an appearance or two, but they've been up. So I'm thinking of guys like Cam Gallagher, who you know, played a lot earlier this season and a good chunk last season. Ramon Torres, who's been up and down a bit. And then even, like, you know, obvious names, guys we've known, like Paulo Orlando, who's been in the minors for, you know, most of this season. I think those guys are definite guys that you'll see coming up. Plus, there's like Glenn Sparkman and Jason Adam, who have been up and down a bit. You know, really made that trek from Kansas City to Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Sparkman pitched all right in his moments. Jason Adams had his moments. I think they're very obvious guys who you would see. So, yeah, I think almost anybody on the 40-man is fair game, other than, you know, Valoria, who's just very young. They added him pretty early in his professional career to the 40-man roster for some reason. Duenas and Gutierrez have been in double A, so they're less likely, but you know, Gutierrez has hit pretty well. So it's not crazy to see, you know, they do potentially have some time at third base to put him in, and he's hit well since being traded to the Royals organization. So it's a non-zero chance. It's pretty close to zero that he'd get called up, but you know, I think any of those guys are pretty much fair game. Because they've already been up for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Goodwin will get activated off the 10-day DL. I think they said that they were doing that on September 1st. Ian Kennedy is doing a rehab start in Omaha tonight. They might get him one more before Omaha's season ends on September 3rd. So he'll be active too. Those aren't really call-ups, obviously, but they are, you know, spots on the roster. So, you know, I don't think there's a lot of surprises on those. You know, Eric Stout's on the 40-man roster. He's, I believe, hurt. I haven't seen the report of what. And he posted something on his Instagram about thanking people for supporting him. So maybe he's getting cut. Probably not. He's pitched okay for the Royals organization, but it was very much a thanks for everything type of Instagram post. So I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, so I think not a lot of surprises on the 40-man roster, but it does get a little bit interesting when you move on to guys who are not on the 40-man roster who have had pretty good seasons in Omaha. So, you know, obviously, Duda being traded, that opens up one spot. Oh, and I didn't mention Jorge Soler, we may talk about a little bit more later on in the show, but he's currently doing rehab in Omaha as well. Again, their season ends on September 3rd, so he's going to be back very soon, so they're going to need a 40-man spot for him to come off of the 60-day DL. So it gets interesting to see, A, you know, who the guys on the 40-man roster are, and then or who are not on the 40-man roster who might get called up, and then to see who they take the place of, because, you know, they're at 39 now. Soler will make it 40. And there are definite names from those non-40-man roster guys who could get called up and really deserve to get called up. So something's got to give. They might get creative in some ways. I think they could call up Bubba Starling and immediately put him on the DL and immediately move him to the 60-day to clear that 40-man spot.
What a debut.
Right. Which I think they did that with Hunter Dozier on opening day last year.
Yeah.
I feel like right. Just procedural kind of thing, but you know, they might do that. They might even do that. If Eric Stout's hurt, they might do the same thing. Call him up, put him on the DL, call up Bubba, put him on the DL, move them both to the 60. You got your 40-man spot. You know, two of them, actually, at that point. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. So, you know, the obvious names, well, the obvious name that everybody, I think, expects and wants to see, and the Royals just traded a first baseman, is Frank Schwindel, who I've been skeptical over the last couple of years, and I've got really no reason to be anymore. He's, you know, he's old for, you know, starting to make his debut, but man, all he's done the last couple of years is just hit the ball. So the Royals have at bats for him. They might as well call him up and see what he can do. So I think he's the most obvious name, among those types of guys. You know, there's some talk of like Nicky Lopez. Nicky Lopez is, you know, one of those players that's played really, really, really well, but the Royals aren't really under any pressure to add him to the 40-man roster to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. And while he's probably ready to play at the big league level, they might also want to just, you know, leave him off and give him a chance to, you know, go into spring training and win a job or you know, start in the minors and be ready to be the first guy up or something. So, you know, he's potentially there too. You know, I think Richard Lovelady is probably another really kind of obvious name. He's, you know, there was talk of him possibly making the team out of spring training. And, you know, all he's done since is, you know, continue to pitch well. 2.55 ERA in 70 innings in Omaha. You know, he's been good against lefties and righties. You know, a lot of people have him ranked highly in their prospect lists, and I think he's definitely somebody that the Royals would give a look to. And he's a reliever, so there's not really much reason to, like, game his service time or anything. So I think those are, like, the three, like, really obvious names to me of guys who are pretty likely to get called up. Schwindel, definitely. I think there's no question Schwindel. It's time. I mean, they got to figure out what he's going to be. If he's going to be someone who can actually come up and hit, or if he's going to be the next in the line of the Calvin Pickering, Craig Brazel, Justin Huber, Ryan Sheely type of guy, Keila Kaihui type of guys who are, Keila, you know, first base DH types with some power in AAA that never do anything in the majors. So, and he might still be that, or he might be legit. He might be, you know, a late bloomer who comes up and just continues to mash. And he's definitely earned the opportunity to do that. And I think with Lucas Duda gone, they've got at least some chance at a 40-man spot. And, you know, they've definitely got the at-bats to give him. So I think those are kind of the obvious names. There are a few other names that we can talk about in a bit. But, yeah, I think Schwindel and Lovelady for sure. Nicky Lopez has a decent chance. Those are probably the three names that jump out who are not on the 40-man roster, at least.
Yeah, I feel like Lovelady has been talked about all year, just kind of like as the next guy, except he's just never been the actual next guy to come up. So he's definitely a good candidate. And I'm sure he's definitely a guy that the Royals want to see what they have with. So that makes him, you know, besides just the fact that he's produced, it makes him even more attractive when they think, okay, he can be a part of this team's future. So let's get him up, get him a little, you know, get him a cup of coffee, let him see what it feels like. And then, you know, start in the minors next year and get ready for his full rookie season sometime May, June-ish of next year. That certainly could be it. But he's also, you know, a bullpen piece. So it's not really as important for them, it seems anyway, to have to start the season in the minors. So he could very well, just, they say, hey, you're going to get some time because we want you to start the season with the next year. And that's what happens. So that definitely, I would probably expect to see him called up at some point in September.
And once they add him to the 40-man roster, he'll finish the season still on the 40-man roster. So once you get into spring training, he'll have all three option years still to go. So if there is something where he struggles, you know, if he's not good in spring training, they can send him to Omaha, and you know, that's just one option year. And then he would still have two more of those remaining. And so there's not a lot of risk for him, because if they ever need to, like, pull him, a guy in the middle of the bullpen is the easiest guy to send down for some time. It's not like they've only got, like, three guys, you know, on the 40-man roster who could play shortstop. You know, you kind of need a couple of those guys at the big league level, no matter how bad they might be. Alcides Escobar. And so, you know, but if it's a lefty reliever, it's pretty easy to find a way to drop him into the minors for a little bit to work on something or get a break or, you know, get a fresh arm up. And so the Royals aren't really in any, you know, strategic or procedural, you know, disadvantage to call him up. You know, it's not the same as kind of not really fine. You know, they don't have to be too creative with a reliever. They just, you call him up. If he pitches well, he stays around. If he doesn't, send him back down, especially in that first year, first option year. It's like, you know, you probably expect him, unless he just like tears it up, he'd probably get sent down a couple of times and come back up. So, you know,
most likely.
Yeah. And it's like, so everything all considered, they don't really have much reason to not add him to the 40 man roster. And I think, yeah, like you said, they definitely want to get a look at him, and he might not perform great, you know, in say 7 or 8 innings that he might get in September, maybe not even that much, but they get a look at him. And, you know, if they want to look at him even more in 2019, that first trip to the mound is not going to be his first ever trip to the mound, and he can at least have it out of the way and kind of go from there. And I think there's something nice to that. I think it's all right to, you know, kind of get those guys up, get their feet wet. And yeah, the Royals are, you know, depending on how this series with Baltimore coming up goes, they're probably firmly in that second overall pick. They're probably not going to lose enough to keep up with Baltimore in the backwards way. And they're definitely not going to, you know, they're probably still not going to win a whole lot of games either. So you might as well bring someone up that you're interested in that you thought might be able to contribute. And, you know, I think it's probably that at a certain point this year, they didn't call him up simply because why do you need to call him up in June? You know, what is it? What are you going to get out of calling him up in June? When you know you've got the opportunity for September, you might as well just let him ride it out.
Even at that point, it was clear what was happening.
Yeah.
So they didn't need him.
Yeah.
Because they were beyond that point where a reliever could help.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting the point you bring up about Frank Schwindel. You know, it's – and we've kind of had these conversations before about players where, you know, when you look at them, when you dig a little deeper beyond the surface-level stats, you think, okay, maybe they – shouldn't be as successful as they are, and you see them in person and it's like, okay, well, you know, they've got this problem and this problem and this problem with their game, so they're, you know, maybe that's not going to translate as well at the next level. But eventually at some point you just kind of have to say, okay, maybe this is what the player is, and they've performed well enough for a long enough period of time that maybe that is what they are and we should give them a chance. And I think that's kind of what Frank Schwindel has done. He wasn't a, you know, wasn't any huge fanfare when he was drafted. He's never been looked at as a huge prospect. Some people have kind of noticed him because he's produced over the last couple of years, but you know, he's been really consistent. I mean, he's got a 286 batting average over all his time in the minors, and he's, you know, he's earned probably a shot. And, you know, with the last 3 years, 20 plus home runs in the minors, I mean, he's, Like you mentioned, he's just produced. And sometimes you just kind of have to say, okay, here's your shot. Can you make it happen? You know? And I definitely think they'll want to do that because, you know, they've got a few options when it comes to first base, and they've got, you know, with Ryan O'Hearn, like you mentioned. And then of course there's always, you know, Hunter Dozier as a possibility. And then, they've got he's a few more years off, but Sully Matias, of course. So they're probably it's probably very beneficial for them to start getting that situation figured out. So they know, you know, are we going to have to look at, you know, is Ryan O'Hearn going to take this job? And we have to look at maybe Sully Matias being a DH when he first comes up, or is nobody good enough, and Sully Matias really needs to work on his defense, you know, stuff like that. So if they're going to have an eye towards the future, it's good to get something like that just to get it narrowed down, even if it's just a little bit more. So that's – I definitely – he's another one that I think it's good that you brought up, because he will definitely – I think he's a very good candidate to be brought up and get a decent amount of time in September so the Royals can kind of assess – what they have. Because if he's, you know, you mentioned Akila Kaihue type, and if he does turn out to be that, they'll probably know pretty quick.
Yeah.
In September. And so then they can just say, all right, you know, work on some things, and if you can clean this up and we need you in the future, we'll bring you up, and which is essentially what happened with Keela. And, you know, maybe he'll get another shot, maybe not. You know, there's it happens all the time. But I definitely think there's no better time than the present, if you will, to see what he can do and if there's anything more there that people may have just been overlooking up to this point.
Yeah. Someone like Whit Merrifield for a long time was completely overlooked, and mm-hmm. now you look at him and he's, you know, the best player on the Royals by far. I mean,
easily.
And he's played well the last 2 years, and he played pretty well in parts 16, and Schwindel could definitely be that. He's made improvements on drawing walks. You know, his career high was, 19 walks in a full season in the minors, up to even last year. You know, last year he just crushed, but he had a .329 batting average between AA and AAA and a .349 on base percentage. So, I mean, it's just like, it's so driven.
It's very Alcides Escobar like of him.
Yeah, yeah. And then this year, yeah, he's only hitting .284, which is still pretty good, but his on base is .335 because he has drawn more walks. You know, and the power is still there. So he's got, you know, almost 60 extra base hits this year. So if he hits well in September, or even if he doesn't, you know, they can go into next season and they know that they've got Schwindel and O'Hearn as options out there, and O'Hearn could play left field if he needed to. Dozier can play third if he needed to. Any of those guys could DH. So they've got an opportunity to play each of those guys and see what they have. And if that means that Schwindel for a couple of years is the first baseman and it doesn't pan out, and, you know, he's 28 years old and he's given way to like maybe Nick Prado's firing up at that point, that could work out. It's you know, I don't think that the Royals are really tied to him. If he doesn't hit well, if he doesn't perform, they're not in a position like they would be with like Bubba Starling in the last couple of years, where there's a lot of expectation and a lot of investment on somebody, and they're definitely not ready, and they keep having this problem and this setback and what have you. So if Schwindel gets his opportunity and runs with it, awesome. And if he doesn't, that's disappointing, but it's not going to leave the Royals out too much, especially the next 2 to 3 years. It's, you know, they still don't really expect, or they probably shouldn't expect, to contend too much, but maybe they do get better, and Schwindel is a big part of that. And in 3 years, 4 years, he's, you know, in the middle of a lineup that's starting to get better and a team that's starting to get better. And, you know, it could all start in September. And I'm pretty sure it's going to. I'm half surprised I haven't seen it pop up yet that he's getting called up. But the Royals are off tomorrow, so they don't really need to make any kind of a move. But I'd be absolutely shocked if Schwindel did not get added to the 40-man and called up. So,
and that's a very good point that you bring up, that it's really great that they are not dependent on him. He's another one of those examples that we've talked about in the past, where if he were to work out, all it does is give the Royals options, and options are a good thing. That's that's what makes successful teams, when you have a lot of different options that you can do. So, you know, no skin off their back if he doesn't work out. Hey, it was a fun story for a little while, but it just didn't happen. It happens all the time in baseball. But if it does work out, hey, you know, we've got another solid player on our hands, lots of options for them in the future. So, yeah, I too would be surprised if he didn't get a call up. So as far as other good candidates, I know you jotted down the name Eric Mejia. So he's in Northwest Arkansas, which, you know, obviously not AAA, but sometimes if somebody's performing well enough and, you know, doing the right thing, they'll sometimes bring them up just to give them a taste, and then make it a little bit easier when they start AAA next season. So,
he weirdly has 5 plate appearances in AAA, because when he was with the Mariners, it looks like they called him up for about 4 games, and he got 5 plate appearances then he played in 1 game last year for the Dodgers and did not get a plate appearance in AAA. So
that's quite a career.
That's kind of weird. you know, obviously.
And he's – go ahead. Sorry, just it's kind of interesting when you look at his just his minor league stats. He's got a lot of time in the minor leagues, 7 seasons, but he's only 23 because he was, you know, Latin American player, mm-hmm. signed when he was 16, et cetera. So he's got a lot of professional experience for someone who's still so young. So that's, you know, that's intriguing.
Yeah, I think he can play any, you know, either middle infield spot. He could play third base. He's hitting all right. You know, his 25 doubles this year, 34 stolen bases, and the Royals do love to run. I saw earlier today, I was just kind of poking around on stats, and Adalberto Mondesi has 12 stolen bases since the All-Star break, which leads all of baseball, and right behind him is Whit Merrifield with 11. So the Royals obviously have always been a running team, at least in the recent Dayton Moore era.
Recent memory.
Speed,
yeah.
was definitely a big thing. So I think he could play. It's another one of those kind of deals where, you know, they don't really have to put a lot of pressure on him. They can just kind of move him around, see what he does. It reminds me a bit of Orlando Calixte a couple years ago, like in 2015, where he was kind of up and they played him a little bit here and there, and he could also play a lot of different spots. And, you know, again, you know, he's just kind of a guy, but, you know, he's got the opportunity to maybe do something. He's got a decent track record in the minors. And obviously he was, you know, brought over in the Joaquin Soria Scott Alexander trade in the offseason. So, I think he's definitely got a, you know, a little bit of a chance to maybe be called up. It's always kind of nice to add those utility types, just because, you know, you can put him anywhere. It, you know, for even an expanded roster, it does give you some more flexibility, and it gives you an opportunity to see what he can do at any of those positions at the big league level, where the game does play pretty fast. So, yeah, I think decent chance that they might think about it. I don't know that he's much more than just a dark horse, but I think Clint mentioned him earlier today, and I was like, well, yeah, maybe, yeah, he might be. You know, mental note, he's worth bringing up. He's worth thinking about. But I probably would guess that they have enough guys between Schwindel and Lovelady. And I didn't really bring up Josh Staumont, but I think they might want to start to get a look at him too. Plus with Soler, they've got maybe 3 to 5 guys they might want to try to add, and we can talk about how they make that room here in a bit. But, you know, they I think if they were to bring up someone like Mejia, they'd have to really kind of believe in him. And maybe they do. I mean, they did trade for him, so you know, it's not like they did that without, you know, just. They just did it without thinking. It's like they definitely had an idea what they wanted and expected when they called him up, or when they acquired him. So, you know, I think he could definitely be part of that. You know, I think if you're in Double A, you have a shot of being called up. It's less likely maybe than, you know, someone in Triple A. But if they believe, and he's 23, I mean, I think he's older than Adalberto Mondesi, which, you know, if you can hold your own at 22 or 23, that's it's nice to kind of get an idea of that now and make your plans going forward for next season and beyond. So, yeah, I think it's worth a shot. It's not as likely as Lovelady or Schwindel, but it's non-zero. I think there's some potential that they could try it.
Yeah, and again, it's another one of those things where if they were to try it and it were to work out, it's just more options, you know, so due to the fact that he can play multiple positions, et cetera. So that's an interesting thing to kind of keep an eye on, not necessarily something that will happen, but, you know, a name to keep out there so that if they do call it, you can say, hey, I heard those guys talking about him on the Kansas City Baseball Vault. So I know at least a little something about him. Another name that we have jotted down here that if you might hear called on a long shot list, but that we thought was worth talking about is Jackson Flores, who's another one of those Latin American players who's got 8 seasons in the minors but is only 24. And he's also currently in Double A, but he's been having a very, very good season down there. So, you know, is he another guy that they might try and make room for? I mean, what do you I guess we'll do it this way. Between the two, who do you think would be the most likely to get a call?
It kind of seems like Flores. You know, he's older. I think he does need to be added to the 40-man to be protected from the Rule 5 draft. And for a guy who's 24, he's played all the infield positions. He's played all the outfield positions this season even. He even pitched last year for Wilmington in one game. So he's done everything except catcher so far. Not that you would expect him to play a lot of, say, center field or anything like that, but you know, you could throw him out there and probably not, you know, fall too hard. Clint Scholes is mentioned a lot, that he's, done a lot of work in the off season and a lot of like the, you know, the winter leagues. He's really put in a lot of effort, and you see it this year. He's hitting over 300. He's got a little bit of pop. You know, he's doing all right, and I think that there's definitely some potential to, you know, see what he can do. Again, you know, he's got some speed. 26 stolen bases this year for Northwest Arkansas. 29 doubles, 6 homers. You know, for someone who's, you know, not really known to have a lot of power. You know, he had one homer a couple years ago for Idaho Falls. You know, small guy, 5'11". So, you know, if he's hitting 6 homers at Double A and can play all over and can get you 30 doubles and steal some bases and you know, do a little bit of everything, that's usable. And if they already need to add him in November to keep him around anyway, because I could maybe see a guy who can play multiple positions is much more likely to get picked in the Rule 5 than, say, Schwindel or O'Hearn, who were left off the 40-man last November too much teeth-gnashing and tantrum-throwing, despite the fact that, like, 3 first basemen have been picked in the Rule 5 draft in the last 20 years. Someone like Flores is a lot more likely to get taken, and maybe he does get returned if that team doesn't really, you know, work out for him. But, like, you can find a way to keep that guy, you know, protected and not overexposed and still get something out of the roster spot. So I think it's maybe more likely that he would get put on the roster now, just because they're going to have to do it eventually anyway. But they're not really forced to. There are guys, Alcides Escobar is going to be a free agent. Feasibly, the torch has been passed to Mondesi at shortstop. They have younger, better options to play a utility role. So, and Flores may be that type of guy. Or, you know, they might add him to the 40-man in the offseason and have him in Omaha and have him ready to come up if he performs well or if they have an injury or what have you. So, you know, they're not under pressure to add Flores or Mejia right now, but I can definitely see the idea that you might as well do it right now, just because you're going to have to if you want to retain those, or at least have the certainty of retaining those guys. You know, just because they're left off the 40-man doesn't necessarily mean they'll be selected for the Rule 5, but, you know, if you believe in that player, why take your chances? Unless it's, you know, a first baseman that is not going to get picked.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of interesting. I'm inclined to agree with that line of thinking, and it'll be, that'll be kind of fun. You know, I was talking to, I had a fantasy football draft on Monday, and I was talking to one of the other players, and they were, he knows I do a podcast, and he says, "Oh, you know, that I've actually had more fun watching this team this year, you know, as the year's gone on," because the his theory was the, or not theory, but his stance was the pressure has been off and not really worried about whether they win games or not, but just wants to see newer players. We kind of talked about this throughout the season of, you know, at some point it crosses that line and it becomes, no longer just like, oh, this is sad and depressing. Well, I should say not entirely to the, oh, this is just sad and depressing. And it's like, okay, well, now we know this season is a wash. Eye towards the future. Who are the players that are going to be a part of this? Let's find out. Let's see some new players, see some new blood. And even those guys that may not be a part of the future that, but just maybe are getting their chance, whether they work out or not, they're going to be playing their butts off because they know this may be the only shot they get. So, you know, that's kind of fun to watch. So I can understand from that perspective. I don't know if I would say, you know, the season as a whole, of course, but this coming month, September, will be really interesting to see, hopefully, you know, some of these guys we've talked about. If we do see either one of the, you know, Flores or Mejia, kind of the younger set, and then the likelihood of seeing, you know, your Schwindels and your Loveladies and those that we've been, those are the guys that for the last couple of years we've been hearing about as, okay, they could be soon up to the big league club and helping out. So that, you know, that's at least something. It'll be fun to see. Are these players for real? Do we have anything with them? Should we still continue to remember their name and be familiar with them, or should we just say, you know what, fun little story, but you know, let's move on, next man up type of thing. So it's getting to that point where it's going to be that kind of fun for the last month of the season, and it will be, you know, all those guys will be busting their humps out there trying to make a good impression and hopefully make a name for themselves so they can make a squad, if not the Royals, somewhere else in the future. So that's always kind of fun to watch. It's always cool to see young players come up, get their first major league debut, get their first major league hit, whatever the case may be. That's always fun to see. So that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, and they definitely are a lot more fun now, and we've talked about that a lot on here, just with Rosel Herrera and Brian Goodwin and with Mondesi coming up and the July that he had, and Brett Phillips came over, and, you know, the O'Hearn has come up and he's just hit the ball like crazy. And then last Friday you get that back to back with O'Hearn tying it and Dozier winning it. You know, the first time that rookies have gone back to back to tie and walk off a game for a win, like ever. It's like, that was really fun. It's like, that's kind of cool. And it's kind of cool to look at Hunter Dozier having what, 7 homers now, and O'Hearn has 6 and Mondesi has 6 now. He hit a home run right-handed last night on a high fastball, and today he hit a home run left-handed to the fountains on a down and in fastball, 96 miles an hour. It's like, yeah, that's pretty dang fun. It's pretty fun to watch these guys do that. O'Hearn went opposite field off Cody Allen, one of the better closers of the last few years. Dozier followed it up, also opposite field, also off Cody Allen. You know, a lot of those things, it's really kind of fun to see these guys, see that light kind of turn on. And maybe, you know, Dozier, still his overall line doesn't look good, but he's contributed a little bit. And O'Hearn, his average is not great, but he's hit a bunch of doubles and a bunch of homers. And Mondesi is still kind of running into some issues, but he definitely looks like he's figuring it out. And, you know, while I don't think he's going to be Francisco Lindor, he's definitely not the Raul Mondesi that was swinging and missing at everything and trying to bunt because he was just psyched out that we saw the last couple of years. So those guys combined with like Whit Merrifield, who's definitely broken out, you know, I think it's a lot of fun. I'd like them to win more, but you know, they're starting to get things together a little bit. You know, and then this month you get to see a bunch of other guys, and maybe it's Frank Schwindel and Nicky Lopez, who, you know, everybody seems to love every time they get to watch him. You know, Lovelady, who a lot of people have been, you know, just he's got a great name, but he's also pitched well. Yes. And so a lot of people are on his side too. So, yeah, I think it can definitely be a really interesting September. You maybe, you know, just ignore the standings. Maybe even ignore the final score. Just kind of like watch the players, pick something that, you know, maybe you can find that they're improving upon and see how it looks at the end of the month. You know, I mean, the Royals aren't going to win a lot more games the rest of the year, but, you know, you can. There's stuff to watch now. And like in June, where they were just miserable, there really wasn't. So
no.
Now there's at least some hint of something, and, you know, maybe nothing comes of it. and that'd be disappointing. But right now, there's a lot of potential, and we get to witness it.
Yeah. So, and when you're 50 games over 500,
that's all
you
got left.
That's what you have to look forward to. Yeah.
Starving man can't throw away bad options. It's like, well,
exactly.
You got to eat.
And as we swing into our final point here, the talking about all these names and who they're going to bring up, you know, and talking about even though the rosters expand, they still have to be on the 40-man roster. And for the players that we mentioned, you know, looking at Mejia and Flores who aren't on the 40-man, if they were to come up, they'd have to be moved. Or somebody, they'd have to, the Royals would have to make a move to get them up. So, you know, we're keeping in mind here that, as you mentioned earlier, Jorge Soler, he's coming off the DL, and he's coming back up, that he's probably going to be on the Major League roster by September. So that's going to fill out the 40-man. After the Duda trade, so what are you as far as you see it? What do you think are the good candidates for, you know, if someone like a Flores were to be moved up or called up? Who do you think gets the boot from the 40 man as it stands right now?
Well, I think there's still maybe a chance in the next 2 days that Willy Peralta might be having a good enough kind of season that some contender might get him. Just, you know, it gives you another quality arm at least in September. And if they're acquired before, I think it's midnight on August 31st. Not 100% sure, but if they're acquired before September, they can be on the playoff roster. So maybe you're in a position where the Phillies want to add a bullpen arm and Willy Peralta's there and the Royals can get cash for him, or the same 25-year-old with one pitch in Double A that we talked about earlier. That would be a move, because you don't really need Willy Peralta on this team. He was also pretty much signed to see if he could turn into something and be flipped for whatever. He's, you know, 8-for-8 in save opportunities. It's not bad, you know. I mean, some teams might value that. He's struck out more than a batter per inning. That's pretty good. He's got a 195 batting average against. All right. So I think he's maybe got some value. I don't know if the Royals have put him on waivers or if he's cleared or if someone's claimed him and they haven't worked. I don't know. I don't know what his situation is on that. So he might be somebody that they could possibly trade. I definitely think that there's a decent chance that Brandon Maurer could get designated for assignment. He had a little stretch there where he was pitching pretty well, and then they put him in a close game, and he gave up the lead. And then they used him the next day, or the day after, and he gave up the lead there. And so it's just like, I don't know. I think the Royals have to kind of give in that, yes, he has stuff. He has good stuff, but he can't get guys out most of the time. So that's difficult.
The Kyle Davies paradigm,
right. I don't know. I mean, it's tough. I think there's maybe a chance that like a Birch Smith, maybe. I mean, he hasn't pitched that well most of the time, but at the same time, the Royals are in a spot where they've made it this far with him as a Rule 5 guy. They might as well gut out another month, and then they can, you know, use him a lot more flexibly up and down as far as options and everything. They're not in that position where they have to return him. You know, if that's what they want to do, if they want to just have that flexibility, I think that's definitely something they would avoid, you know, dumping him. But, you know, he hasn't pitched to really justify some of that usage. You know, like we said, they could get creative and try to call up Eric Stout technically to the big league roster and then put him on the DL and then move him to the 60 to create, you know, when they call somebody else up. That's definitely a possibility. You know, I don't think they would do it, but Drew Butera has definitely not had a good season offensively. The issue there would be they would only have, you know, Valoria, who is on the 40-man roster, yes, but, you know, he's definitely not ready to do even, like, part-time work in the big leagues. at this stage. So they'd be limited to Sal Perez and Cam Gallagher, which, you know, that it kind of doesn't really take advantage of the expanded rosters when you've got a catcher in a pretty much lost season who doesn't necessarily need to be catching every day for another 30 days. So I don't know. I mean, they are in a bit of a crunch. I mean, there's also a potential maybe that Jason Hamill could get designated for assignment. But, you know, someone mentioned it on Twitter today, and I don't recall who. But something about, like, you know, the Royals aren't really the type of team that might do that for a veteran who they've had on the team all year, which, you know, okay. Maybe they wouldn't, but at the same time, it's like if they need the spot and they want to get those guys up, they might have to go ahead and do that. It might be Bubba Starling. I mean, Bubba Starling is doing a rehab assignment, just started today in Idaho Falls. So I don't think at this stage they would be trying to do that if they were just going to throw him, you know, call him up, put him on the DL. You know, it just seems weird to me that they would bother to even mess with it that way. So I don't know. It's tough to kind of see where that matches up and where, you know, they end up finding the space to add these guys, because, you know, they do need at least two for the guys that we really expect. And there might be another two guys that they add on top of Soler coming back and presumably, well, he'll be coming back on the third. So if they call anybody else up for Duda's spot, and let's say that's Schwindel, you're right there. That's the full 40-man roster at that point, with Schwindel being added and called up. So they would have to figure it out by September 3rd what they were going to do to reactivate Jorge Soler. So maybe that's Maurer. I think he's most likely. They might, if Stout is hurt. That's definitely got some potential just because, you know, 60-day disabled list. Well, there's only 30 days left in the season. So, or 30 whatever, you know, 30 plus. So they might as well add him to the 40-man. So I think they're probably going to have to be creative and a little bit obvious, you know, Maurer, and maybe manipulate some of those injuries and kind of make it work that way. So, you know, I definitely don't think that if you're being loyal to Jason Hamill is keeping them from adding Josh Staumont. Well, okay, that's one thing. But, like, if you want to get a look at him right now, you might as well add him to the 40-man and see what happens. So I don't see them doing that, but I think that is something that they could potentially try to do. So, you know, maybe if it turns out, you're 39 now, Peralta makes 38, let's say Stout to the DL makes 37, and you designate Maurer, so that puts you at 36. You could add four guys, so there's Soler, Schwindel, Lovelady, and who knows at that point. So maybe that's how it shakes out. I don't know. They're in a weird spot because they have so many other young guys already that it's like you're not going to dump Rosel Herrera or Brian Goodwin. They just added Jake Newberry to the 40-man roster last week, a week and a half ago, somewhere in our break. So that's another spot that, you know, is occupied. So they're in a bit of a crunch, but, you know, it's not filled up with a bunch of, like, overpaid veterans. It's not a bunch of, like, guys that have no potential, no future. It's a bunch of guys that they want to get a look at. I think somebody mentioned maybe they'd release Escobar. Royals would not release Alcides Escobar.
No.
Not at this point. He could be hitting zero.
Just keep him for the 30 days and let him ride off into the sunset, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing to say, yeah, technically they could do it, but it's definitely not the way this organization would behave for that player in this situation. So that's not going to happen. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they shake it out and make it work, but I think there's going to be some movement you know, between right now and when we do our next show.
Yeah, and you're talking about loyalty. You know, there are the situation they're in now, loyalty buys them nothing. You know, you could make an argument that if they were having a bad season the last couple, you know, and they the last couple of years weren't great, but they weren't bad seasons, especially not on the level of this season. But, you know, you could make the argument that loyalty in some form is going to help them with guys like, you know, trying to re-sign some of the players that were going to leave. So that's something you could possibly make that argument, but that's not, that doesn't apply here. So having any sort of loyalty, now Escobar's a little bit different, but when you're talking about guys like Hamill, et cetera, there should be no loyalty from the organization. If they have someone else that they'd rather see, then bring them up at this point.
Yeah.
Hell, they're 50 games below 500.
Yeah.
There's no point.
They don't need to sweat a guy who just got his ERA under 6.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
and who's had enough experience that you know what they are at this point.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, there's not much upside left in Jason Hamill.
No. You know what you're getting
yeah.
with him. The good and the bad. Mostly bad. So.
Yeah. I guess Paulo Orlando is another guy they could dump, but it's kind of in that same territory as Escobar that I just don't see him doing it. You know, I feel like they'd let it be much more of a clean transition somewhere in the off season instead of abruptly right now in September.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So,
I guess with that, we'll kind of wrap up a kind of final point. And just that, as we've mentioned, the Royals are indeed 50 games under 500. at one point, they were 51 games under 500. Which just ties them for the worst they've been ever in franchise history.
They just won like 4 out of 5, though. So
I know. So, you know, heating up. But they've got a series coming up with the Baltimore Orioles. They are right now 2.5 games ahead of the ahead, quote unquote, of the Orioles. Well, legitimately, they are ahead. But in terms of the first, so they're behind.
Right.
In terms of the first pick.
The practicality of their standing is that they are behind Baltimore.
Yes. So if the Royals are to get, if they're gunning for that number one pick, or if you as a fan want to see them get it, then you got to hope for a sweep.
This is your World Series. This is.
It's here, you know. Isn't it kind of how quickly things can turn, right? Just 4 years ago.
Yeah.
These two teams met. In the ALCS.
And now. They're clearly the two worst teams in baseball.
Yes. So if you combined the win total for the Royals and the Orioles.
Oh, God.
The combined win total of those two teams would still put them out of the wild card race in the American League. That's how bad these two teams are. So just some perspective there for
yikes.
You.
Yikes.
The Royals are almost exactly the opposite of as I look at the standings now. The Royals are 41-91. The Red Sox are 91-42. So almost exactly the opposite, which, you know, when you're having a season as good as the Red Sox are, that's pretty impressive that you could have someone who'd be almost exactly opposite, or in the case of their own division, worse for the Orioles. I guess who will be the first to 100 losses between the two? Because it's going to happen for both teams. So who will be the first? Who knows? But that's kind of the most notable thing about, besides roster impending roster moves.
Maybe they'll keep Brandon Maurer through that series then.
Yeah.
That's, it's very important that he pitches in high leverage situations late in the series.
Ned put him in every high leverage situation. That's the directive from the front office. That would be quite funny, actually. But anyway, I think we'll leave it there. We'll wrap up our show with that. We'll be back next. I know it's been kind of a busy couple weeks, and we've sparsely had shows. But for the near future, as we finish out the season here and go into the off season, we should be back on the weekly schedule, so be sure to tune in for that. And as I'm sure everyone did in the couple of weeks that were gone recently, but I encourage you to still do now if you're jonesing for that Royals stuff, for just Royals baseball. Go watch some at Kelly's as your final few opportunities to watch some Royals baseball at Kelly's, our longtime sponsor. Only about a month left to make it happen, so go out there and make it easier to watch as we watch some of these young kids come up and fight for possible futures in the major leagues. And keep going to BP Kansas City as well. We continue to have, even though Mike and I may take the occasional week off, the site never does. We've got a ton of good writers. They always pump out content. And it's great stuff at that. So be sure to go and visit BP Kansas City. And in between listenings of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. So with that, we'll leave you. Thank you all so much for listening. We love you all. We couldn't do this show without you. Again, thanks to our sponsors, Kelly's and BP Kansas City. So we will be back next week talking more Royals and hopefully we'll have a lot of the moves we've discussed. We'll have those in our hands figuratively to talk about. So we'll be back to talk about that next week. We hope you'll join us. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.